Hello and welcome into the Bird Gang Blitz, everyone. We are back after a little over a month-long hiatus. I'm back over here, as always, with the Venerable John, Venerable Johnny's Football. John, how are you doing? I know we've had a little bit of vacation and downtime, at least, so I wanted to check in, see how you've been doing.
Yes, we're all still nursing our hangover from drafting Josh Rosen because it was that epic of a moment. But enjoying the downtime, enjoying what I've seen so far from OTAs, excited for minicamp and, of course, training camp next month. And still waiting for that big Cardinal signing post-draft, and we'll touch on that. But, yeah, anxious to see what's ahead for the Cardinals and specifically Steve Keim.
Definitely. No, we've got a bit more off-season news to go through since we've been off for a while. The first thing we'll want to talk about, though, is the biggest news overall at the Cardinals is that David Johnson, after standing to the sideline, not really participating at the end of the OTAs last week, is officially holding out of minicamp. He is looking for a new deal, set to make $1.8 million and wants to make more. John, what's the first reaction to this? Is this something that is kind of expected? We haven't really had an actual holdout for a while from a Cardinals player. Is Johnson right in holding out, or is this an area where the Cardinals have the leverage and he needs to kind of just, you know, be showing up and practicing?
Yeah, it's strange because you're right. Under Steve Keim, I don't remember a player ever holding out. You look back and think about the individuals who, I don't want to say were frustrated with their contracts, but you knew had money coming to them one way or the other. Of course, Larry Fitzgerald's had a number of contract extensions. Tony Jefferson a couple years ago before walking with the Baltimore Ravens. Remember, he didn't get a restricted free agent tender that was going to pay him like $1 million more and was incredibly, you know, TO'd about that. And then most recently, Calais Campbell left for greener pastures. He played on the franchise tag once or twice and then left for Jacksonville and got big time money. So none of those individuals, and those are players that are playing premium positions, it's specifically Campbell, defensive end, none of those players held out. They all played really well. Tony Jefferson and Calais Campbell most recently had great seasons before walking. David's situation is very interesting because not necessarily because of the position he plays. We've seen it before, most recently with Le'Veon Bell. I think Dallas could be heading toward the same thing with Ezekiel Elliott, but because he missed all of last season. He didn't play at all. He had the injury to his forearm that kept him out almost the entire season outside of, you know, the first half in Detroit, but he still worked out. He was still with the team. Supposedly he looks like their best player period in these OTAs. He's put on muscle. His lower body is tremendous. He's had an opportunity to work out consistently. It's not like he, you know, had a lower body injury and tore his ACL, tore his hamstring. So he's been in the fold. But at the same time, he knows the longevity of the running back in this league outside of, you know, your Shady McCoys of the world, Frank Gores, guys who are playing into their 30s, is not very long. And the Cardinals' expectation, at least when Bruce Arians was here, was he was going to be the bell cow of their offense. You know, he was going to get 30-plus touches a game. He led the league in yards per scrimmage, had that phenomenal MVP-type season in 2016. So he figures, okay, you're going to wear me down. I want to get paid, and this is probably my big contract opportunity. For what it's worth, and Blake, we've talked about this off the air, I think it gets done. I don't think it becomes a distraction. I think it gives other guys in the short term, specifically TJ Logan and Chase Edmonds, an opportunity to get some reps in Mike McCoy's offense. But, you know, I can't see this. And even Adam Schefter and Ian Rappaport alluded to this. I don't see this lingering into the season or even, you know, well into training camp. I think they get this settled. And you made a great point, Blake, that you could elaborate on. You got to get it done now because you don't want, you know, Le'Veon or potentially Zeke setting the market and pricing yourself out. You get David's done now, and then you figure both of those guys' contracts exceed David's when they're executed. And then last but not least, the Cardinals have a ton of cap space, especially heading into next season. They're going to have 70-plus million in cap space. You're going to have a plethora of money coming off the books, specifically Mike Iupati, Sam Bradford, we assume. So they've got the cash to do this. They've got, you know, the resources. You take care of David Johnson. He's one of your own. Steve Keim's, you know, arguably his best draft pick. So I'm not concerned, but it is, you know, a little bit, I don't want to say alarming, but odd because it's never happened with Steve Keim and the Cardinals.
Yeah, totally agree. That's part of the reason why it seems odd is because either players would leave, or even in the case of occasional like times where you'd have questions about if a player would hold out or not. Tyrann Mathieu was the last time we had this situation. Steve Keim has almost always, without fail, rewarded the player the year before their contract has been up. So that's what's most curious about this is why did David Johnson kind of feel the need to hold out? Was it maybe an agent pressing him to do it just to send a message? Because as we can see, there was even, I believe it was Joel Corey sent out a tweet today that the Cardinals have extra leverage on David Johnson because if he decides to hold out past a certain date, he would be eligible for only 3 years of service, not four. So what that means is that he would be able to go into next year with he wouldn't be an unrestricted free agent. He would be able to get an RFA tender for that one. So basically he would be restricted. The Cardinals would be able to restrict his rights and basically treat him the same way they treated Tony Jefferson. And that's not what he wants. So this is with August 7th, just 30 days before the NFL's first regular season. So there's not going to be any type of Le'Veon Bell style holdout where it's, you know, September 1st and he's finally rejoining the team. There's not going to be one of those types of situations. So right now, when you're looking at the landscape of the NFL, Johnson does have one thing against him, and that's his age. He was drafted coming into the league a little bit older as a running back. And right now he's 26 years old. He'll be 26 throughout the majority of the year. But you look at the other top backs in the NFL. You've got Ezekiel Elliott, 22 years old. Alvin Kamara just drafted at 22 years old. Even Todd Gurley drafted the same year as David Johnson is 23. And he'll be 24 when the season starts. But Johnson's really approaching 30 a little bit more rapidly than some of those other players. And he's missed an entire year last year. I've seen some comments I know that fans have had who are either usually of other teams who are wondering if Johnson missed all of last season, he's holding out. It doesn't seem like it's the right move, but it's kind of discounting his first two seasons, which were absolutely incredible. This guy, of course, set the Cardinals rookie record for touchdowns. And before the 2016 injury against the Rams, he had averaged 100 yards or more per scrimmage. He's only, you know, first player to ever do that in the first 15 games. And would have gotten 2,000 for rushing and receiving. So this is a guy who basically is your offense. The offense runs through him. And he missed last year with probably the most, it's not like to say it wasn't a serious injury, it's still a broken wrist, but as much as it can take to be a 15 games that you've missed without actually reducing your impact for next year, it wasn't like, as you said, an ACL tear, it wasn't like you had a strain or repetitive injuries that would cause a lot of wear and tear. So the biggest thing against Johnson is age, and I'm thinking that's probably the reason why he would have held out. If the Cardinals have decided that they want to see him play through maybe week 8 or so, I know Carson Palmer in 2014, they gave him that extension about midway through the season. There's other guys like Justin Bethel. If he feels like he's going to be treated that way and they're a ways apart off on their deal, I think that would be more concerning. For me, I think you just take a look at the fact that Steve Wilks is saying he believes it's going to get done. The Cardinals seem to be in the perfect line to be able to get the deal taken care of. And it doesn't seem like it's going to be a huge hit to their cap space this year, too. Devonta Freeman is probably the best example you can take a look at of a contract. 26-year-old guy. He ended up signing for, I believe it was about $8.4 million a year. Johnson's probably going to get about $9.2 million, and I'm thinking it's probably going to end up being maybe closer to a four-year deal. If Johnson can hit the free agent market again at age 30, he may be able to get one last big deal if he's shown himself to be durable, but it might be he doesn't have as much of an audience. So it's going to be interesting to see. Maybe it ends up being the difference between 4 to 5 years with Arizona, and maybe that's what they're going over right now. But it's notable. What's interesting to me, at least this I think will be something good to touch on, is seeing if it will turn into kind of the green light of, okay, this is all good to go, the yellow light of adding some caution. If it continues into training camp, through training camp, there's not a deal done, that's probably where you start looking at the red light as far as for if this guy is going to be, coming into the season, wanting to have that long-term security. The good news is that he's holding out in part because he wants to be here. He wants to play in Arizona. This isn't a case where David Johnson's coming in, playing his last season with Arizona, and then hitting free agency. He wants to have that long-term security and stay here. That's something that I know you and I have talked about this, John, that the Cardinals have really done such a huge 180 now that players are wanting to be here. So now the question comes to the other guys. Yeah, you've got Marcus Golden coming in his last year of his deal off of an ACL. You've got your Dan Buchanan, who he's playing in his fifth year contract extension. And the only reason David, of course, is having this entire thing is because he was a third round pick. You got awesome value out of him. You don't have that first round tender you're able to put on like you will for Buchanan, for a Josh Allen, even a Kandichi Humphreys if we get to that point. But that's what I wanted to bring up to you, John, is looking into the Cardinals with their future. You got Dan Buchanan's in the last year of his deal. Marcus Golden also, he's coming off the ACL. Are the Cardinals making the right choice if they do decide to pay David Johnson? Are we going to see some of these players who are pretty valuable to their team walk? Are there other extensions that we should be seeing throughout this time before training camp?
You know, I thought even before David's discussions were to ramp up, I thought the Cardinals would have extended Dayon Buchanan by now. You could make an argument he has been the only first-round pick from Steve Keim that has made any kind of impact. You can make that argument pretty easily. He's been incredibly consistent. He had a tremendous 2015-2016 run. Last year, pretty good, missed four games. But with the transition into a new defense with a new head coach that specializes in back seven players like Dayon, I could see them taking a wait-and-see approach with him. But again, you've got Hassan Reddick on a rookie deal. You've got some other pieces at the linebacker position that are not making a great amount of money. That's not a position where you've invested a lot. I think you could throw some money at Dayon, hopefully keep him around. You know, unlike David, he's only 25 years old. And so you've got an opportunity to lock him up for the prime years of his career. And I've always been impressed with his game when he's healthy. And I think he'll benefit from a 4-3 switch more than any other player that we don't talk about. Again, he had nothing to sneeze at last year, 82 tackles, a sack, and an interception in 12 games over the course of 16. That's over 100 tackles and many more plays made. And so I think he's kind of the forgotten man. Marcus Golden, of course, had the tremendous 2016 season, led the team in sacks, looked like the superior pass rusher over even Chandler Jones, and was on the fast track for NFL stardom. Then, of course, you know, got off to a slow start last year, tore his ACL. I don't know if that was, I'd hate to speculate if that was conditioning, that kind of thing. He just didn't look right when he played last year. And so he had an opportunity to, you know, get his body right. He's going to come back from all accounts. He's going to be full strength when the season begins. And he's got an opportunity to make some money for himself. I think that's a scenario, Blake, and, you know, correct me if you think otherwise, that because of what the Cardinals are paying Chandler Jones, I think Marcus Golden could be the prime option for the franchise tag, especially coming off an injury. We could see him having something like, you know, Ziggy Ansah had last year with the Lions, got production, had double-digit sacks, but weren't quite sure if they wanted to invest long-term, so they slapped him with the franchise tag, and I know that they're looking for other options opposite him. The Cardinals are fortunate to have Chandler Jones, the NFL's leading sack master from a year ago, and so it's kind of unique in which not many teams can pay both of their premium edge rushers, both of their double-digit sack artists. But again, we'll get into this later. If you're paying Josh Rosen next to nothing and you've got minimal investments elsewhere, that might be a scenario in which the Cardinals and Steve Keim can splurge. Other than those two players and then, of course, David Johnson, I don't think there's anybody else really I could see having an extension other than maybe Larry Fitzgerald could have a 1 or 2 year extension continuing his playing career in the desert based on what we see out of Rosen. But, you know, you turn to the offensive side of the ball, and outside of David and Larry, it's pretty slim pickings. DJ Humphreys, by all accounts, has had a very nice spring. But again, he's got to make his money when the season starts, when the pads go on. I like what I've seen from him from a leadership standpoint. He's been very outspoken. He's front and center all over the Cardinal website. You would think with the attention he gets and the presence he carries that he was a, you know, first team all pro already. This is a guy who is yet to complete a season, yet to stay healthy. When he stayed healthy, he's been good, but he hasn't been great. He hasn't shown greatness yet, but he's the baby of the group. He's I believe 23, 24 years old, was the number one offensive player coming out of high school, not offensive tackle, but offensive player. University of Florida, he was exceptional, but he never played in a three-point stance, was only in a two-point stance. And so they had to kind of, Bruce Arians and his staff kind of had to strip, you know, his attributes, his technique, and start from scratch. And so he's had a slow start combined with the injuries. So the rest of the offensive line, you know, has been a series of journeymen and free agent signings. They haven't been able to ever develop that marquee player up front. You know, Ricky Seals-Jones is an undrafted tight end that they're putting a lot of, you know, stake into. We haven't seen them make an addition there. So, yeah, I think outside of David, Dayon, and Marcus Golden, I just don't see anybody else getting a big-time extension anytime soon.
Yeah, and DJ Humphreys, it's kind of crazy to think about, but he ended up getting his fifth round tender for as a first round pick, where they, you know, they signed him. He'll be extended. He's here this season and next season, basically guaranteed at this point. And Teddy Bridgewater did not, which is like kind of crazy to think about when you look at the importance of quarterback and some of those rookie deals. Some of it shows the risk, but it also shows the faith and the trust that the Cardinals do have in DJ Humphreys. The hope is that he'll be able to kind of restore that. But you're right, he's only 24 years old. This is his fourth year in the league. So some of that ability of just drafting these young players, when you look at the difference between DJ Humphreys, who's going to be having, you know, he's gotten already his kind of big deal that he's had for the end of that fifth year round option. And then he'll be getting his entire huge paycheck probably at some point if he has a solid season, either next year or the year after. And he can play in the league a long time, whereas a running back like David Johnson, this may be kind of his biggest bet of being able to get his big payday. So in that sense, the holdout does make a lot of sense to see. I agree with Marcus Golden. We'd even talked, I know, about how the Cardinals were in a position potentially where if they weren't able to land a quarterback, being able to bring in a outside linebacker or a pass rusher or a defensive end, since Steve Wilks is going to be moving to that 4-3, being able to see how Golden will hold up in this new defense. The Cardinals have a lot of leverage where they can use a franchise tag if he does go off and have a huge season playing at defensive end. If he doesn't make a good turnaround from the rest of, you know, the transition from his ACL, maybe you do end up seeing him walk. Deion Buchanan's the guy who I think would be potentially, if you do see another extension, I would be totally on the same page with you. Even though the pass rusher might be a bit more important, considering the fact that we have a guy who might be a perfect spot for that roaming linebacker position in Buchanan, who you already know will be able to be a guy who can play all three downs. It'll be really interesting looking at their draft needs for next year, because I think that's where you go into the next offseason and say, okay, is it going to be another Mike linebacker that they're going to look at instead of Josh Bynes? Are we going to be looking at, you know, any other defensive linemen? Or if, you know, the offensive line goes out, has another injury-ravaged year, DJ Humphreys can't stay healthy, that's going to be maybe where you start looking at what's going to be kind of the biggest need heading into next year. One of those needs might not be, or is might be a little different from what we had looked at coming in the season, is wide receiver. There's already rumors that have been going around, and no comments, obviously, from Larry Fitzgerald, but there is some kind of budding thought that he may not just be here for 2018, but he might be here for 2019, potentially even 2020 as well. John, let's talk about this. Is this all due to Josh Rosen's impressing in camp so far? We'll get into more, of course, the Rosen talk, but is this kind of a case where Larry Fitzgerald might be coming back for more than just setting a few records? Is it possible that he could see the team having a shot to get back into the playoffs, making another run, and him being able to continue his level of play?
Yes, and I'll break it down based on percentages, what I think. I think it's 25% cementing his legacy as the number two receiver of all time behind Jerry Rice. And then I would combine that with financially, just, you know, Larry likes money. Obviously, he's had one of the most savvy financial careers in NFL history, has renegotiated his deal many times, has many outside businesses and ventures. I wouldn't be surprised if he wanted to own a share of an NFL franchise at some point. But then the other 75%, I would put solely on Josh Rosen, what he's seen so far in training camp. You know, Larry's been around a lot of quarterbacks, a lot of bad quarterbacks in his time in Arizona, but he's been around two pretty good ones in Carson Palmer and Kurt Warner. You know, I think Larry understands by the time the Cardinals drafted Josh Rosen, what he's seen from OTAs, he knows this kid's going to be the real deal, health permitting. There's no reason to think Larry can't continue to play at this level because of the fact that he can catch so many balls out of the slot. He kind of plays right now that hybrid wide receiver tight end role. His hands are still exceptional. I think he's looking at this opportunity of saying, why not take this year to year? Because I've got a young player in Josh Rosen that I think could be pretty good. And I know Steve Keim with Josh Rosen and get on that rookie deal is going to surround this team with many, many, you know, great free agent signings, expensive free agent signings to get this team where it needs to be, a la the LA Rams and what they're trying to put together. You know, I've seen people hype up this division, and again, it's good on paper, but it's not comparable to the division in 2013 when you had Super Bowl heavyweight contenders in Seattle and San Francisco. Those two teams were leaps and bounds better than everybody else. The Rams were always hovering around 500. You've got the Cardinals, who are a wild card, and not, you know, potentially a wild card team, but just a wild card in general. We don't know what to expect from Wilkes and potentially Rosen starting. Seattle's clearly rebuilding. You forget the San Francisco 49ers were a complete dumpster fire before they rattled off five straight with Jimmy G. That roster is not good. They've got an opportunity to probably, I don't want to say take a step back, but would anybody be surprised if they won six, seven, eight games? You know, that's not, you know, a ridiculous claim. And then, of course, you've got the class of the division and the Rams. But again, they're going to go year to year, and they're going to have to pay their rookie quarterback, Jared Goff, or their rookie deal quarterback, Jared Goff, at some point. They're going to have to cut a lot of these free agent loose additions loose, like Sue and Aqib Talib. Some of these guys, Marcus Peters has got to get paid. You know, Gurley's got to get paid at some point. So Cooks has got to get paid. So it's year to year in the NFC West. I think Larry Fitzgerald knows that. And if Josh Rosen comes out and balls like we all think he's going to do, and Larry's productive, and they've got a window that reopens suddenly, and he likes what he sees from Steve Wilkes, there's no reason why he can't one last time with, you know, his, I believe this will be his fourth head coach, chase a championship. And I think that he looks at Josh Rosen as his meal ticket.
Yeah, no, the Cardinals are an interesting spot because Fitzgerald is kind of year to year. Like, he made, you know, he came back for $11 million and obviously for the part to be able to set history. But what's interesting is what you're saying is totally true. He's probably in the best quarterback position that he's been in a long time, at least since Kurt Warner. But even with Kurt was still year to year at that point. And we even remember after that 2000, and I believe it was after the 2008 season, Kurt even went and flirted with the Niners just because he was a free agent. The Cardinals weren't seeming to be willing to even pony up for that. That was, you know, the different era, different organization. A lot of it was also the fact that they had Matt Leinart on the bench, and we all know how that turned out. But he's in a spot where he's not just looking at Carson Palmer as an old aging quarterback, then having guys like Drew Stanton, Blaine Gabbert, and no one else young behind him. He's looking at having at least a solid starter in Bradford, who does his most amount of damage out of the slot. He's also then looking at a guy with like Glennon who can at least come in and start. It's not like you're going to be looking at, you know, Blaine Gabbert having to take over and just struggling in the red zone, barely able to put up more than 12 points in some of the later games. You're then able to kind of see that you've got a really good situation, a spot here, and you've got an offensive coordinator, Mike McCoy, who's committing to not moving you back outside, you know, unless it's, you know, needed, but he seems to be playing the majority of his snaps in the slot, playing that same role where he was so successful under Bruce Arians. I think that's been part of why Fitzgerald is kind of having some of these rumors come up. So if the Cardinals can go into next year not having to be forced to have to look into bringing in a replacement for Larry Fitzgerald, the flexibility opens up so much because they'll have plenty of cap space to be able to bring him back. Speaking of the Niners, it's going to be really interesting just to see how that team turns out, as you say, because we've got in the NFC West, this is kind of getting a little bit into previewing some of the NFC West news. Each of the three teams has a player holding out. David Johnson, who's probably a top three running back in the NFL. Aaron Donald, number one defensive lineman in the NFL. And then Earl Thomas, who's probably, I would say, easily the best safety in the NFL. All three of them are holding out for a new type of deal. The Cardinals are in a position, probably more than any other, to be able to pay those players, because the Rams, after signing Sue and some of these other guys, are probably going to have to pony up for him, but it's going to be expensive. It's going to end up being very quickly limiting them. Whereas the Cardinals with David Johnson don't exactly have, they're not going to have to worry about paying, you know, $20 million a year to David Johnson. It's going to be probably about $9 or $10 million for a valuable running back, but that's what's really interesting getting into that. Let's talk a little bit just about with getting into some more with Josh Rosen, because he's been super impressive to the point where people are looking at this as a legit quarterback competition. So that's the question I'll give to you, John. And I think I know exactly what you're going to say, and I know what I'll have at least. They'll probably be going the opposite approach. But do you believe that Josh Rosen is the Cardinals' week one starter at quarterback?
I do, Blake, and I've said this for the past 2 or 3 weeks. I think he's going to start week one. I think they're going to roll the dice with him. I think that Sam Bradford right now is kind of an enigma. I heard Steve Keim make a couple comments on radio the other day claiming that Bradford has looked good when he's practiced. He reminds them of why he was the number one overall pick. That's when he's practiced. He's been on a special program this spring based on the fact that he's still rehabbing from an injury, an unknown injury, that is not really clear to those in the media. We have not gotten a definitive update on what his knee looks like, what percentage of health on his knee. Remember when he signed, he was incredibly vague about the status of his knee. He said he felt good, but that he didn't say, I'll be ready week one, I'll be ready for the preseason, so on and so forth. And right now, I don't think fans particularly care if he's ready or not, because they want to see Josh Rosen. Josh Rosen started as a true freshman at UCLA. He's the only true freshman to ever start quarterback. Carried a bad program for the likes of 3 years. Got his ass beat by a terrible offensive line. Was not protected at all. Was on a team that was headed by a defensive head coach. Did not have, you know, a slew of 4 or 5 star players around him like Sam Darnold. So you think about, is there anybody more prepared than Josh Rosen to come in and play right away? And that was his MO coming out. It's like, Josh Rosen may have character concerns, durability concerns, but, you know, he's probably the most polished guy to play week one. And so all that combined with the fact that he has not just looked good in OTAs, by all accounts, he has been the best quarterback during OTAs by a mile and has looked like a 10-year NFL vet. And so you've got that momentum going. Why stop it for a stopgap in Sam Bradford to play, you know, 2, 3, 4 weeks? Again, it's going to be production-based, but I think we're going to go into this training camp and this preseason with both of these quarterbacks vying for this starting job. And I'd be surprised if Steve Wilks didn't declare an open competition. He's come out and said the best 11 are going to play. Sam's the starter right now. But who's to say Sam plays week one of the preseason? Looks okay. Josh comes in, tears up the second string. Guess what? Preseason week two, I bet Josh Rosen's starting that game, and so on and so forth as we move through the three preseason games that matter. So it's just drip, drip, drip out of the faucet. You hear more and more information come out that leads you to believe, hey, this kid's got an opportunity to play right away. And why aren't we talking about this more? From a national perspective, all I hear are analysts claiming that he has been phenomenal. They are super impressed. He is taking in all the information, lightning speed. Remember, Sam Bradford, number one, is new to the team as well. So it's not like he's Carson Palmer and he has this reputation with the franchise. And number two, he's learning Mike McCoy's offense for the first time. You know, he's been in the NFL. He's seen a lot more. But at the same, the Cardinals don't owe Sam Bradford anything other than a large salary for this year. They're not, you know, tempted to play him based on the fact that, you know, he was with Mike McCoy last year. They have a rapport, so on and so forth. They can get to Josh Rosen as quickly as they want to. My only concern about him potentially not starting is the state of the offensive line and whether or not they want to play him in the early games against, let's say, the LA Rams at LA in week two. Is that a game you want to subject him to? But if you think he's ready, if he's ready to be the starter, you just have to roll the dice. And we've heard Steve Wilks say that the best unit on offense that they have is the offensive line. So I don't know if he's trying to talk those guys up. I don't know. Steve Keim may have another addition in his back pocket, you know, come, you know, training camp. But I'll say it again. I've been saying it all offseason. I'll say it through the summer. I think he's going to outplay Sam Bradford in the preseason. You know, I don't want to root for injuries, but I think there's a good chance he could be injured. I think it's 50-50 he could be ready for week one. I think that there's no point in waiting, especially when you want to go into 2019 with an opportunity to compete for a championship. You want to make sure that he has enough reps and you know what you're getting come next year.
Yeah, and I think that's part of where if it's close between the two of them as far as the actual competition, then you'd go with Rosen because you know that he'd be the guy you'd grow with over time. The only reason why I think that they would have Bradford is because I do think coming back to, you know, you could change Bradford's name on the back of the jersey to if healthy. I think that Bradford, at least at this point, because of the accuracy when we've seen him play, he would probably be enough ahead that you would say, all right, well, we'll have it be the veteran who would go out for the start. And for some of that might be the same reason you'd just given. He's going to be taking possibly a beating the first two games, but I think it's going to come down ultimately to how they'll play in the preseason, the training camp, and especially to Sam Bradford with where he's at with his injuries. Because you just take a look at his last year, he ended up having an arthroscopic knee surgery, which they called a cleanup, with having to get out rid of some cartilage, a bone spur. The biggest thing is with him having multiple tears on that knee, is he have enough as far as for, you know, padding left? We know that Drew Stanton reportedly at one point last year was playing without an ACL in one of his knees, and some said that was a bit overkill. But it just is when you've got this kind of chronic injury that you have with Bradford, and in some cases you look at him, he's moving fine, you can see some of the exercising, but it's more about the overall wear and tear of being able to plant, to be able to push off of that versus just your simple walking and running. It's going to be interesting because the entirety, I think, of the reason why you got Sam Bradford was to maybe not stave off a rookie quarterback, but to try to give yourself at least a guy who is a better chance than maybe a Josh McCown or even rolling with Mike Glennon as the starter. I think that Rosen will really prove himself when it comes to it in the game, similar to Russell Wilson in 2012, where you're brought in with Matt Flynn to be a guy to compete with the starting up. Tavares Jackson's the guy you prefer as a backup. He'd started the year previously, kind of like that Drew Stanton of a known commodity, not exactly a starting quarterback. So I think the biggest difference between Arizona's situation and Seattle's is Arizona's got a little bit better quality of quarterbacks. It's pretty easy for Russell Wilson to stand out against those quarterbacks and OTAs. But again, like you said, the preparation is key. Rosen's not really had any type of struggles with the offense. There's nothing that's been there. He said the biggest issue for him is not the speed of the game, not any of the terminology or the language. It's been more of the scheme as far as for seeing things in the NFL where, you know, guys are kind of baiting and switching a little bit more in college, where maybe you could catch a guy off guard up the seam with an RPO run pass option. Whereas in the NFL, Rosen even said today that you'd have guys who would be blitzing like they're showing that they're going to have an all-out blitz, and suddenly they bail and there's eight back there. And so for him, it's just the, oh, this is a little bit different from expected, but he already knows where to go to with the ball. He already knows what's going to be the next action. So for him, it's more of just once you kind of, and they talk about this from year to year, once you kind of see it all as a quarterback and you have been kind of exposed to everything that's under the sun, you're not able to get baited into some of those changes anymore. That's kind of where you see guys in that 30-year-old start to kind of really grow and develop. He's kind of already at that stage where a lot of guys at 24, 25 might be coming in. He still has a long way to go. There's still, you know, there's times you'll see interceptions in practice, or sometimes it'll be the 2-minute drill. This is just the case of, you know, it's a fire hydrant of information coming in. The fact that he's been able to handle it while you have other reports that we're going to get into in a second for, you know, other quarterbacks, talking about the Josh Allens, the Baker Mayfields. Some of these guys are a little bit further behind in their development. Rosen was the most pro-ready guy potentially since Andrew Luck. Maybe even if you want to throw Carson Wentz in there, he did play at a much higher level of competition overall. But this is a case where the Cardinals kind of maybe have lucked into a guy who maybe you could argue should have been maybe, for most normal standards, the number one overall pick in terms of just being able to see, here's what we know is going to be what we get. What we get out of the player is so expected that we don't have to have the same type of worries we'll have with other players. With Baker Mayfield, we want to make sure he's taking enough snaps under center. With Lamar Jackson, we want to make sure that we're working on the accuracy and with some of the delivery so that he can at least know what the reads. With a Josh Allen, we want to make sure that he can know where he's seeing on the field with his decisions. Rosen is very much kind of almost like a plug and play, to where the point of that I can see Rosen starting easily week three. If Sam Bradford's going to go out there for week one, I think that could be very similar to last year. The Cardinals are trying to get him ready for week one. I could see it potentially being where he plays minimal snaps in the preseason, ends up still starting week one, just to kind of either give Rosen that time or to kind of see just what they have in Bradford. If they end up, you know, going through Bradford for 2 weeks, at least he plays well enough, seems to be healthy enough, and Rosen's able to take over in week three. If a team loses their starting quarterback, maybe you could kind of see if you could finagle a pick similar to the Philadelphia Eagles did when they saw that. Or maybe you're right, and maybe this is the Carson Wentz situation where the Cardinals see what they have in Rosen. They know that he's good to go from the starting at week one. They don't have to worry about Sam Bradford. They can try to get whatever they can out of him. I don't know if they're not going to be able to get a first-round pick, obviously, after the wear and tear, but this might be where you can see the Cardinals embracing the future, where the future isn't, you know, week three. The future isn't week eight. The future isn't, you know, the last five games. The future might really be now for the Arizona Cardinals. All right, we'll be right back here after a quick break here on the Bird Gang Blitz. We'll go over the wide receiver position. There's a couple of guys fighting for that, some of the other news from OTAs, and take a look around the NFL. There's a few things that are of particular interest, especially the NFC West. And on that note, what in the world are the Seattle Seahawks doing, it seems? That's all right after this on the Bird Gang Blitz. Welcome back into the Bird Gang Blitz. Johnny, let's go ahead and talk a little bit. We've gone a little bit over Rosen. We'll continue kind of talk some about that through the show, just as the Cardinals. I mean, we have a franchise quarterback to be excited about. But let's talk a little bit about the wide receiver position, specifically Christian Kirk, because the number two position is wide open at this point. Kirk recently did have his charges. We kind of, you know, suspected it could be his charges that came out after the draft were dropped. Do you have any concerns, since we didn't really get a chance to talk about those, with those charges now that we've seen that have been dropped? And is Kirk going to be that number two wide receiver, or is a Bryce Butler or J.J. Nelson or even a Chad Williams a guy who could step up? Is this going to be, or is this the Christian Kirk show that we're looking at?
I think they drafted Christian Kirk with the idea that he's going to be a 1A, 1B kind of receiver with Larry Fitzgerald. I mean, you draft a player in the top 50, you think he's going to be a quality player for you that has a chance to make a Pro Bowl at some point. I think that he may not be, you know, a 1,000-yard receiver, game breaker year one. I think he's going to contribute, whether that's, you know, in the screen game, whether that's in special teams. He's got a little bit of an uphill climb because he's going against a couple savvy veterans in front of him. Bryce Butler, when healthy in Dallas, performed pretty well. And I know a lot of Dallas fans are kind of scratching their head as to why they didn't keep him, especially with the state of their receiving core right now with the lack of Dez Bryant. Terrence Williams has question marks after his arrest. So I'm sure they'd love to have Bryce Butler back. And then, you know, I've always been a J.J. Nelson fan. I thought he was going to take a big step forward last year. For whatever reason, it didn't transpire. 2016, he was, you know, outside of Larry Fitzgerald, their best receiver at the end of the year, had a monster game at Seattle, over 150 yards. He and Carson Palmer had a great rapport. He's still got legitimate 4.3 speed in this league, and that's something you just can't teach, and I think it's valuable. And some of the other guys on the roster, I think, have an opportunity to shine, but those two, and then potentially Chad Williams, you don't know what you have in him. He came into the camp last year out of shape, unacceptable, but again, year two, it's a wake-up call. So you've got a lot of wild cards at that position that I'm excited to see, and frankly, this is how your receiving core should be built. I'm not a big proponent of taking receivers, not necessarily in the first round, but fairly high. And I know the Cardinals got Larry Fitzgerald third overall, but unless they are a transcendent type pre-draft, and you know that by all accounts, Calvin Johnson, Julio Jones, Larry Fitzgerald, AJ Green. Oh, yeah. I'm just not a big proponent in drafting receivers high. There was a stat that came out, you know, over the course of the last 5 years, receivers drafted period, but really in the first one or two rounds just have not been productive at all. You look at the most productive receiver last year, Juju Smith-Schuster to the Pittsburgh Steelers. He went, I believe, late in the second round. So, again, a lot of that's tied to your quarterback, but at the same time, I like that they've kind of flooded the position with guys that can contribute, maybe can give you 500, 600, 700 yards, but not necessarily are going to be that breakout 1,300-yard receiver. Christian, again, my pro comp to him is Golden Tate. Same measurables, same attributes, both 5'11", around the same, you know, weight. Had that opportunity coming out to return kicks early on in their career and then transition to an outside receiver. Both have breakaway speed when they need it, can be possession receivers if you ask for it. Kind of have a stocky build. You know, Christian's got big arms, his lower body's, you know, in great shape. He's somebody who can break tackles if needed. And the fact that he's a local product is just icing on the cake, his relationship with Larry Fitzgerald. So you've got kind of the perfect storm right now of young guys and then a veteran like Larry to all grow together with Josh Rosen. And I'm excited to see that transpire. And then I'd be remiss if I didn't include, you know, Ricky Seals-Jones in that conversation as well. He is so impressive in the short time that we saw him last year, specifically once Blaine Gabbert got to start. He was a rookie a year ago, is only 23, and had basically 200 yards and 3 touchdowns in the span of like 3 games when they featured him in the offense. Just a complete mismatch at 6'5", 225. Could be the next gem Steve Keim finds via undrafted guys like a Tony Jefferson. And as long as I've been following the team, Blake, a lot, you know, I was not alive in the 70s and the early 80s. I didn't see Jackie Smith play. This team has been sorely missing the threat of a tight end. And that's back when the league didn't utilize the tight ends. Now everybody's really got a tight end, except for the Arizona Cardinals. They've been looking for some time. Troy Nicholas obviously did not work out. There has been a slew of other players that they've invested high premium picks on that, for whatever reason, have not, you know, worked out. Part of that, I think, has been the quarterback play. But Ricky Seals-Jones, to me, has an opportunity to put up big time numbers in this Mike McCoy offense, in this, you know, play action 3-5 step drop option where you see him coming open in the middle. I think he could have 700 yards this year. I know that might seem egregious to some people who would say, well, he was undrafted last year, he's going to be learning a new offense. What I've been seeing is he's been a mismatch already in OTAs for some people. Health permitting, I think he could be the number two receiver on this team behind Larry Fitzgerald, at least until Christian Kirk catches up. But I'm excited about this core. I like the unknown factor as well. You know, this team was tremendous at the receiver position in 2015, and then it's all kind of fallen apart. I think this is the year in 2018 where we kind of see that unit start to flourish and build back up. And then I'd be remiss if I didn't mention David Johnson, who is really the true number two receiver when healthy and could have 1,000 yards rushing and receiving. I don't want to say pretty easily, but it's certainly obtainable for a player like him. So I think they've got nice options all around. And the great thing about Josh Rosen, he can spread the ball anywhere. He is efficient in that short to intermediate passing game. I think that was his best strength coming out. His accuracy is phenomenal. So I could see a lot of these guys having catches, and it'd be a fun offense to be a part of.
Yeah, no, the biggest thing is it all depends on those young players. Because, you know, when you compare with Golden Tate, this is a guy who, you know, last couple of, I believe it's the last four out of the, three out of the last 4 years in a row, he's had over 1,000 yards receiving. That 2014 year with Stafford with 99 catches, 1,331 yards. That's basically what you kind of would wonder about Christian Kirk, because he's also got that special teams ability as well. And so that's one of the biggest things is with these new kickoff rules, how is that going to turn out? Are we going to end up seeing a lot? We should be seeing a lot more longer kickoff returns, because it's going to be more like a punt return versus guys having to kind of down at the, it just took away one of the most exciting plays in football. And the Cardinals with Amos Jones had terrible special teams. Steve Wilks seems to be making it a huge emphasis. And I think that's one of the biggest areas of finding different ways to use Christian Kirk will be helpful. You're mentioning Ricky Seals-Jones, and he's a guy that I know we've talked a bit about him on the podcast, but this might be your breakout player for next year, because with Mike McCoy's offense, you look back with not just the Peyton Manning years, but just the previous years of the Antonio Gates and Hunter Henry, even when he was the head coach and kind of in charge of a lot of the offense in San Diego. Henry, I believe, came in when Wisenhunt was the OC, but a lot of what Sam Bradford does even is make plays the tight end. And that was one of Josh Rosen's biggest strength too, is that intermediate passing zone. Now Rosen, what's interesting when looking at some of the stats from last year, where it came to the drop rate, as far as for looking at deep play action passes, when you factored in the drops that came in, the guy who was the highest in deep play action passes was Baker Mayfield. Not too much of a surprise there. Had a cannon for an arm and some of the best deep threats in football. Hollywood Brown is going to be a really good pick next year for them. But Josh Rosen closed the gap very, very quickly. So you're looking at Josh Rosen when it's talking about truly a drop. I think that the deep game, as far as for whether that's freeing up Christian Kirk, even J.J. Nelson, that might be the most underrated part of Rosen's game, of where he's able to place it on a dime deep and being able to burn teams off of the play action. So it's going to be a very interesting offense, just because you're going to have some very polished, accurate quarterbacks with a lot of guys who are able to make a living in the intermediate zone. Seals-Jones is that guy who, when you look at him and how he kind of compares to, he is really just another one of these big wide receivers who's playing tight end. We haven't talked as much about Jermaine Gresham. It'll be really interesting to see him coming off of injury, since the Cardinals, they gave him that big contract. The thing that's most curious about Gresham is, and might be an area where you look at Fitzgerald in 2013 and 2014, we thought, okay, they're kind of overpaying Larry Fitzgerald. He's just not used as much in the Bruce Arians offense. Once he kind of bought in and the offense was more designed around Fitzgerald's strengths, and once he recognized what it was for him to be that blocker and a receiver, he just took off and exploded and all of a sudden started having this kind of comeback season. I'm wondering if we see something similar from Gresham and the other tight ends. Gabe Holmes is another name who has kind of flashed throughout a lot of the OTAs and even the first day of minicamp with Rosen kind of putting the ball in a spot where it's right over the linebacker's head, just in front of the next guy. Holmes has made some great catches. So the tight end might indeed be the position where, for the first time, the Cardinals actually start seeing that used a lot more, just by being able to take advantage of some of these athletes to be able to make some big plays off of it. As for Christian Kirk, it's interesting. They did finally have, I think it was some of the body cam footage was finally dropped, as far as where his camp and his team has been defending him for with the car and with attacking the property, about how it looked like it would have been abandoned for a long time. There's some people are throwing rocks, and just the fact that it seemed very much like that it was his friends, the people who were there, started trying to defend him. It'll be interesting, because we talked about this with Tyrann Mathieu, about how him leaving the Louisiana area and leaving his past friends was probably the best thing that could have happened for him. For Kirk, it seems very much more like he's in a better situation in terms of, you know, not having any type of history of, like, you know, the severe drug use, but it'll just be something to be able to monitor. If there's a second incident that pops up, then I think you start to worry. I don't honestly expect that from Christian Kirk here anytime moving forward. Let's go ahead and talk a little bit about some of the post-draft fallout. You know, we got to briefly cover some of the different guys like Christian Kirk, We is potentially a dream draft for the Cardinals if Kirk ends up being kind of that Golden Tate type guy. I think if he does move to the outside some more, you could end up seeing maybe a Stephon Diggs, a guy who's a number one wide receiver, or a team who's able to get that separation. Maybe more than just kind of a slot guy. This is really optimistic for the Cardinals would be if you can have Kirk outside, Fitzgerald inside, have your tight end, and a David Johnson maybe even be able to line up outside or inside. Another guy who's been really making a big name for himself is Chase Edmonds, the running back who's already kind of in the number two role, just how Rosen's elevated himself to kind of be the number two quarterback. Chase Edmonds already the number two wide receiver. This is a very athletic guy, a bit smaller than David Johnson, but the same skill set. And he's now getting number one reps throughout the team up until David Johnson comes back to camp. What are some of your thoughts being able to reflect now that we've seen with Chase Edmonds? Do the Cardinals still need to bring in a veteran running back, or are they going to kind of bring in Edmonds? This is a guy who fans should be kind of more buying into as being able to get legit playing time for the Arizona Cardinals this year.
I think he is probably the lead candidate for the number two back. It's unfortunate because TJ Logan looks so good last year before his season-ending injury, and I thought he was going to be electric behind David Johnson. And right now, you know, he's got a little bit of an uphill climb to surpass Chase Edmonds. But, you know, he's drawing legitimate comparisons to quality running backs. I think his closest comp is a Deion Lewis. I think he's got that kind of ability. I think that, you know, he is what the term that you hear most often is you can find quality running backs in any round. I think he is a talent that could have gone, you know, day two, that slid to the fourth due to the positional value, the devalue of the running back position. 5'9".
He's a Fordham. Yes,
that's right. Incredibly productive as a college player. 5'9", 205. Had one of the best combine workouts at that position that I've ever seen. I mean, his lateral quickness in the combine, go pull that up if you haven't seen it. It is unbelievable. His hips and his movement is something to behold. And I think that he's got an opportunity to be just a complete game changer, a game breaker. You know, we love David Johnson, all that he brings to the table, but he's not somebody that generally we think of as somebody that could take 70, 80 yard touchdown to the house, right? He's going to grind you down. He's going to wear you down. He may break a long run here or there, but I think Chase Edmonds have the opportunity to take a ball to the house based on his ability to cut one cut and go, and has legitimate 4.45 speed. And it's another weapon for this offense to utilize that's being undervalued. I'm anxious to see how he does in the preseason. He's got a little bit of Andre Ellington in him, whereas he's quality pass catcher, but I think he's better inside runner than Andre was. And he's somebody that I think going into this year has an opportunity to carve out a spot offensively, a role, whereas a lot of these other rookies, day two specifically, day two, day three, may not have a chance, at least right away. You know, Christian Kirk's got a long uphill battle because of all the vets that we've talked about, and that's kind of a difficult position to transition into receiver. And then, you know, day three, just on the surface, I don't see any of those players making an immediate impact. I think Rosen and Edmonds are the two that could see the most playing time right away. And, you know, who knows, Blake, if this holdout goes into training camp for whatever reason and he gets first team reps, you know, I could see an opportunity where he maybe starts a preseason game. Hopefully it does not come to that point. But again, you knew the Cardinals after David went down last year and they headed to trade a sixth round pick for Adrian Peterson. You knew that the Cardinals were in a position where they could not be lax at the running back position again. Steve Keim probably didn't want to pay money for, you know, a backup. Like, you know, I read at some point that they were not necessarily close, but in talks with free agent running back LeGarrette Blount, and ended up signing with the Detroit Lions. That would have been a nice fit. But roll the dice, got Edmonds in the fourth round, and I think he'll be productive for them. The only position, not position, but personnel set that I'm a little bit concerned about is that of goal line and looking for that power back behind David Johnson. And we'll see what transpires, you know, throughout the rest of mini camp and camp this fall. But that's a position that could be difficult. The Cardinals struggled in the red zone each of the last two seasons under Bruce Arians. That was part because outside of David Johnson, they didn't really have anybody that could hit the hole and get tough yards. Chase is only 5'9", 205, but hopefully he plays bigger than his size would suggest, because right now they do not have a power back. I'm not sure if Elijah Penny is still on the roster or not. We'll have to look that up.
He's a fullback now.
Yeah, so he's all changed positions, so that probably tells you what they think of the power back. But I'd be a little bit concerned, because if David needs a breather or goes down, you're essentially letting the defense know that you're in a passing set. So, but I like the opportunity that he has in front of him, and I think he could be very productive in year one.
Yeah, I know, going in the behind the scenes from the Cardinals flight plan, and that's one of the best things as a fan to be able to see is a little bit more inside the draft room, where and all or nothing, you got to see the Cardinals when they took David Johnson, just how excited they were about, you know, the previous player and Amir Abdullah, and then all of a sudden when they took David and saw the player that he was going to be, at least it was just fascinating to see behind the scenes. They were high enough on Chase Edmonds, we find out, that they were considering taking him in the third round, where most teams were probably looking maybe closer to the fifth or the sixth round for him, partially just because of the level of competition. They were high enough on him that they were looking at potentially taking him as their third round pick. And something that's kind of incredible about Edmonds is he did have a leg injury this year. It was kind of later deemed to be, you know, not a, you know, serious leg injury. It took him out of most of the games this year. But what's crazy about Chase Edmonds is from the time that he stepped on the field at Fordham, he was probably the best player in the FBS in terms of the fact that he averaged over 2,000 yards from scrimmage every year from 2014, 2015, and 2016, over 2,000 yards with rushing and receiving, which is kind of incredible that he was the best player on the field. And what's also interesting about him is the fact that he's only 22 years old. This is a guy who's still very young. That means that he dominated his level of competition from the time he was 18 years old. Like, I can't even imagine being an 18-year-old coming onto a college show, even though it's a level you could say of Fordham. That's still really impressive. The Cardinals had a very lofty comparison that they made to him as far as for who the player that they think that he can be. A lot of people have speculated that that player would be Brian Westbrook, another guy who is about 5'10", 5'11", about 205 pounds, had a dominant career, very shifty. So this is where I think when you're looking at the Cardinals, when they have the running game this year, Steve Wilks wants to make the run game a focal point. Arians wanted to make the running game kind of set up the passing game. We've seen from a lot of the RPOs and the teams that they've more kind of moved to having an effective running game where you can have big plays, but not necessarily making it about the, you know, pounding the football. I think the Cardinals could be a team similar to maybe the Niners or even the Seahawks with Lynch in years of past, where you do end up seeing them put emphasis on having the fullback run up the gut. I think that as long as Derek Coleman ends up doing a solid job as a fullback, I don't know if they need to have the power back necessarily. With Bruce Arians, he had to have a power back, because you'd get guys on, you know, the 1 or the 2 yard line and no fullback to be able to kind of clear the way. You had to be able to get through as there. The fact that they have a fullback now with Mike McCoy, that also opens up some passing game opportunities for a fullback to catch a few passes out of the backfield. I think that will take care of a lot of the kind of the red zone woes that the Cardinals have had in years past. In addition to the fact that they'll be involving a tight end. Bruce Arians did not throw to tight ends very often. You know, occasionally you'd see Troy Nicholas catch a pass in the end zone. Occasionally you'd see Ricky Seals-Jones get targeted there. I think that the fact that they'll be moving in with all of these different types of, you know, offensive weapons in a much closer, you know, tighter, quick passing offense, I think that you'll be able to see if the Cardinals can get use of these big plays from the running back, maybe even from like a J.J. Nelson. Once they get into the red zone, I think you might have a lot more consistency. All right, let's talk a little bit now about the defensive side of the ball, because the biggest news that happened for the Cardinals getting a number two cornerback, we looked at it potentially in the draft. Were they going to be taking a look at a guy like Isaiah Oliver or, Josh Jackson? They've made a trade for a veteran corner with a lot of upside in Jamar Taylor. So I'm curious to hear your thoughts on that, because this is a guy who the Cardinals had a couple of free agents who were signed, but this is probably your number two corner entering camp. What are your thoughts, at least, on the Cardinals trading not a 2019, but a 2020 sixth round pick for Browns corner Jamar Taylor?
It's a potentially savvy move by Steve Keim to reaffirm the secondary status as one of, the strongest on the team. And a lot of people will probably scoff at that notion. But you got Patrick Peterson, who's an all-pro. I think Buda Baker's on that same route. I like a lot of the complementary players that they have. I think Brandon Williams has an opportunity to be a nice player under Steve Wilks. And then you bring in Jamal Taylor. First, you bring in Breeland for a workout. He is clearly either asking for too much money or is not healthy. Multiple other teams have reached out to him and has not signed the contract yet. So I don't think the door is closed there. But then right after Breland's visit, you trade for Jamal Taylor, only 27 years old, went to the University of Boise State, 5'10", about 200 pounds. 2 years ago, 2016, had a breakthrough season, three interceptions, was their best corner, along with Joe Hayden, started opposite Joe Hayden. Justin Gilbert, he made him all but expendable, was a former second round pick, I believe, of the Miami Dolphins in 2013. So was very highly regarded coming out. I remember him coming out of Boise State, but again, I thought he was probably too small for what we ran at the time, at being 5'10". Last year really is just kind of an enigma for any Browns player. I don't think that with what went on a year ago in Cleveland, you can hold any individual player accountable. So I kind of give him a mulligan on that. Again, he still had 62 tackles, was a consistent starter for that team. But again, if he can duplicate his 2016 season when Joe Hayden was opposite him and make plays on the ball, I think the Cardinals have gotten a quality player at the number two cornerback position. And Steve Keim really is at his best dumpster diving for these number two corners. Everybody wants to talk about using premium draft picks to find, you know, Patrick Peterson's running mate at the number two cornerback position. And that's fine. You need a lot of great corners in this league that can play, guys who are long and fast and physical and have makeup speed and all that good stuff. But at the end of the day, if you're getting consistent pressure up front, you know, a lot of those guys are made to look better than they actually are. And Steve Keim has done a very nice job really during his tenure of finding quarterbacks that can play at a capable level. I look back at Jerod Powers when Arians was first brought on board. He was a very nice player for the Cardinals. Antoine Kaysen had a very nice season for the Cardinals in 2013. Of course, 2014, the Cardinals signed Antonio Cromartie on a one-year deal. He made the Pro Bowl. You know, over the course of the last couple of years, they brought in veterans that have initially sat the bench for the first 1 or 2 weeks, have come in and played well. The unfortunate part is Brandon Williams has yet to show he's really an NFL player, and Justin Bethel is nothing more than a special teamer. So I like the fact that they're going after veterans. I was a little bit nervous, Blake, that their first round pick this year was going to be a cornerback, assuming that all four of the main quarterbacks, five of the main quarterbacks, were going to be gone. Because I kind of compare that a little bit to receiver. I think you can find great corners anywhere in the draft. And again, when you already have the guy, and that being Patrick Peterson, how many resources, how many high premium draft picks can you spend at corner? To me, it's a position that's interchangeable. And think about how many players play that position at the college level. You think about in the NFL, teams use, you know, four or five corners at minimum. In the college level, they use three or four. Every team's interchanging about three or four corners right now, especially if you're talking about the spread offenses that you see in the Pac-12. All those guys have to find a place to play. All those guys are going to enter either the draft or become undrafted guys, and you're going to find, you know, potentially a lot of undrafted guys or diamonds in the rough on day three of the draft. And so Jamal Taylor, to me, the risk is minimal. Again, sixth round pick in 2020, so you're not even sacrificing a pick in next year's pivotal 2019 draft. It's a position I still think that they could add another player. And we'll see where some of these guys go. And I know we'll touch on safety here in a minute, but the secondary, to me, I think is really in great hands under Steve Wilks. I'm not concerned about it in the least. I know some people are, but Taylor's ability really to play press man and what he showcased in 2016 gives me reason to think he'll be just as consistent as some of the other free agent corners Keim has brought in.
Yeah, when you're looking at the Browns and Greg Williams having an in-box safety that they had drafted at least as a rookie, playing like some 20 yards back in nearly every play, including running plays, it's like it's hard to be able to fault Taylor's, having a down year. I do think that his best year did come from the slot. There's been some, you know, possibility that if Rashad Breland does decide at least to finally kind of take and settle for a one-year vet minimum deal, the Cardinals could maybe still bring him back and kind of take a chance on him as far as for with injuries. Maybe that would end up being kind of the secondary, where it's not as much a patchwork secondary, but you're more looking at being able to add guys to the position, recognizing that as long as we have Patrick Peterson, and he's in a role now with where he's not going to be playing the same type of coverage or having to switch back to zone like he was so often in the early part of 2017 under James Betcher. Being able to make more plays on the ball now, potentially, that's where you don't really have to invest a whole lot of the position. I know the Cardinals wanted to bring in a guy. The idea of them drafting a guy high is in case you can't bring in a veteran. They were looking at potentially trading for Jamar Taylor before the draft as well. I think the fact that they waited, and then when the Browns landed two cornerbacks that ended up playing into Steve Keim's favor, even got Taylor to be able to restructure his contract where they've got him now, not just for this year, but for next year. So what's great and what I loved about this move was cost you almost next to nothing. It's, you know, you kick the can down the road in the sixth round pick that's not going to matter in 2020 anyway. You might even get a compensatory pick that replaces that. But you've got the guy now under contract for 2 years. So either you can extend him if he does end up playing well, or you at least have him under 2 years where if he does play well, has an awesome season, he'll be back for next year and you won't have to worry about the position next to Patrick Peterson for 2 years, which is fantastic. Let's talk a bit about Noah's safety. You mentioned Trey Boston is the kind of guy we've highlighted as coming off the best year of his career, 25 years old, still out there. Some other guys like Eric Reed, who's, you know, he's wanting to make a case as far as for kneeling with the national anthem, but the Cardinals still seem to have interest in him. And Kenny Vaccaro, who's a former first round pick who had some injuries, but still is a solid player. Boston might be the guy. I would have probably looked at the amount of cap space the Cardinals had and considered signing him already. But when you look at factoring in David Johnson, potentially a Dan Buchanan deal, I can see why the Cardinals haven't signed him. Is this the guy that you think the Cardinals should be looking at for bringing in and kind of completing that secondary?
I do. I think he is the prime individual to bring in for a number of reasons. He's got experience with Steve Wilkes. He played in Carolina, had a pretty nice season for the San Diego Chargers a year ago, has great size, is 6'1", about 190, only 25 years old. Could this be your new DJ Swearinger? I think he has an opportunity to come in and get quality playing time. Antoine Bethea had a nice season by all accounts for the Cardinals a year ago, but is conceivably in his last year of his contract. It's crazy to me that this safety market has not ramped up yet, and it's mid-June. Trey Boston is a guy who had 5 interceptions last year, which I believe led all safeties or was close to leading all safeties. He is a complete and utter stud at free safety when healthy, and I think he's got an opportunity to come in and push for playing time right away alongside Buda Baker. Health has been a problem. He only played one game in 2015 for Carolina, played 10 in 2016, only started 10, but then last year got a chance as a full-time starter in 2017, again racking up 5 interceptions and 8 passes defended at the free safety position. His length is something to behold. Went to college, I believe, at North Carolina, so close to Steve Keim's alma mater in NC State, but just we kind of round out a group I think that, again, is a little bit underrated. But you talk about rolling out Bethea and Buda Baker and Trey Boston with Patrick Peterson, that's pretty good. That's probably as good as you're going to see in the NFC West. I'm not overly impressed with the safeties that that the Rams have. Earl Thomas may or may not be a Dallas Cowboy. He'll probably be at least one year and done in Seattle, or done, you know, via a trade here in the coming weeks. And then San Francisco, outside of Tart, really doesn't have much at the safety position. I think you've got an opportunity here to snag a guy that could be a very nice, you know, midsummer signing, like an Eric Winston, like a John Abraham, but hopefully you can parlay that into a multi-year deal. The better off you are in finding these guys now in compared to March or April, before they count against your – the reason a lot of teams wait is they don't want it counting against your compensatory picks in future years. If you sign players at the beginning of free agency up until, I believe it's like the end of May or June 1st or something like that, it doesn't count against your comp picks next year. So Cardinals could give Trey Boston – I'm not saying they would, but a nice 3-year lofty contract, and it's not going to count against potentially getting a comp pick next year. Not that they're due a decent amount, but I that's how Steve Keim thinks. He's a comp pick junkie, so to speak, and had a slew of them this past year. But I think he's somebody, Trey, that has an opportunity to come in and start right away. Again, Eric Reed's available. He's a quality player. Kenny Vaccaro was a phenomenal player early on as a first rounder for the Saints, but kind of fell off a little bit. So we'll see where the dominoes fall with these safeties, but it leads you to believe, Blake, a little bit like the position maybe being devalued and teams are going to more, you know, hybrid secondaries that consist of only one safety and maybe three corners in their starting backfield. But again, he's somebody I think that should continue to be on the radar. And in Steve Keim's interview with Doug and Wolfley, I believe it was yesterday, they said, do you anticipate signing another safety at some point? And he said, yes, I do. It's just a matter of when. And again, it, like anything with Steve, it comes down to money. He's the king of take or leave a contract. So I'm assuming if the medicals checked out, Trey Boston has a contract with from Steve Keim waiting. And he's probably just you know, weighing all of his options at this point. But somebody who had five interceptions last year and looks like a player on the rise, I'd be surprised if he wasn't locked up here in the next couple weeks.
Yeah, especially since the Cardinals seem to have the most interest and the most contact and the most comfort with him. It might just end up depending on when he's going to end up taking that in camp. It also kind of reminds me a little bit of, it might be similar to the Jermaine Gresham situation, where you look at the Cardinals were willing to pay Tony Jefferson, just not what the market was. They didn't have the money to pay him as the market was looking for. And with Antoine Bethea at 34 years old, this is potentially a spot where maybe you bring in Trey Boston for a year, assuming that another team, you know, doesn't take a look at or snatch him up. He's clearly not going back to the Chargers. That seems to have been made clear with them drafting Derwin James. He could end up being a guy who's only 25 years old. If he comes in, plays solid for a year, maybe he ends up becoming your Jermaine Gresham, of the guy who is the Keim time sign, who ends up sticking around for a while. If that ends up being the case, where maybe he gets like a 3-year deal after spending a year with the Cardinals, plays well, Bethea maybe ends up, he's on the last year, I believe, of his deal, you may end up looking at kind of a long-term secondary of having Buda Baker being that free safety and Trey Boston being kind of the deeper safety, who's able to kind of maybe be a little more free when Buda switches to man. Having Patrick Peterson for a few more years and Jamar Taylor, you may end up having kind of the crux of that Cardinals secondary for the next couple of years at least, especially considering Boston's age and the lack of wear and tear that there's been on his body. Let's go ahead. So the only biggest thing I think that we want to kind of cover is just a little bit around the NFL. We'll wrap up with that, taking a look at what the rest of the NFC West has kind of had from their fallout from the draft, their OTA stories, and also taking a look at the other quarterbacks not named Josh Rosen. How are they turning out? Is this a spot where Cardinals fans are going to have regret, or is it going to be kind of comfortably smirking, looking at that the Cardinals may have gotten a true steal in Josh Rosen compared to somehow how the other quarterbacks are performing? That's on this last portion next of the Bird Gang Blitz. All right, welcome back in for the final segment of the Bird Gang Blitz. John, let's go ahead and take a quick look at the NFC West, just with how the Rams are seeming to be kind of the most, considering them the class of the division. They've got a pretty stacked offense, made a trade for Brandon Cooks. They had no picks basically this year in the NFL draft. A lot of vets, but it's not really seeming to be sustainable. So talk a little bit about just some of the teams in the NFC West, starting kind of with the Rams. Is this a team that's going to be, you know, and for a fall after last year, did they kind of overperform, or is this going to be kind of a 13-3? Maybe it's their kind of 2015 season for the Rams if they make a big push for the Super Bowl. But is that going to be sustainable this year?
I don't think it's sustainable after this year, but they're doing what I hope the Cardinals plan on doing in a year or so. They've got Jared Goff on a rookie contract. He had a nice year last year under their new head coach, and I think he's somebody that should continue to grow in that offense. But you're talking about utilizing draft picks for one-year players like a Brandon Cooks. I do anticipate they get him signed. You don't spend a first-round pick on somebody like that to trade for somebody like that and then not secure him via contract extension. But at the same time, Aaron Donald is going to get paid. He's going to be the highest, if not defensive player in the league, or if not the highest player in the league, the highest defender in the league. And then you look at Ndamukong Suh is likely there on a one-year deal, one-year prove-it deal, as much as he can be, you know, told to prove it in a contract year. You know, Marcus Peters is probably the best pound for pound, the best corner in the league based on a coverage standpoint.
He's got to get paid too.
Yeah, he's going to get paid a lot of money. He is not a sure tackler by any means, but as a cover man, he is fantastic. He's going to get big time money. Todd Gurley is probably going to be the highest paid running back in the NFL, probably this time next year, if not sooner. And then Jared Goff's going to get a contract extension in about 2 years. So this team's window is now. They know it's now. I'd be a little bit concerned about complacency. I'd be a little bit concerned about the fact that their left tackle's another year older at, I believe, 35, 36. I think their offensive line overachieved last year, and it caught a lot of people off guard. That whole offense in general caught a lot of people off guard. The defense is going to be phenomenal. The defense on paper is one of the best in football. It's the best front seven in football. I think it's obviously the best front four. Wade Phillips is just a mastermind defensively. So I think they're going to have a lot of opportunities to shut people out. I think the offense year two with this head coach, with this coaching staff, usually you see a small step back. I mean, the year Gurley had last year was just unbelievable. Not as good statistically as David's year or the year before, but I could see them potentially going anywhere between 9-7, and like you said, 13-3. But I'd be shocked if they didn't win the division. They just have so much talent on paper. I touched on the Niners a little bit ago. I've been a Jimmy G fan since, you know, he came into the league. I live in Illinois. He went to Eastern Illinois. I thought he'd be a good player. But again, that team right now is being overhyped based on him winning five meaningless games at the end of last season, beating the Rams in week 17, that they sat all their players. I think they beat the Jaguars and the Titans, both of which the Cardinals beat last year with Blaine Gabbert. I mean, how much can you read into that? The Cardinals are picked to finish last via Vegas in the NFC, and they won eight games last year, went 5-3 with Blaine Gabbert and Drew Stanton. So a little bit of inconsistencies. I think anybody would say that the Cardinals would have a better roster than the Niners, but is Jimmy G that much better than what they have in Sam Bradford and Josh Rosen? We're going to find out. But their secondary, their pass rushers are pretty underwhelming. I mean, the Niners really don't have anybody at the pass rushing position to speak of. All their rushers are from the interior, like a DeForest Buckner. And then offensively, they've got a bunch of probably C-plus to B-minus receivers. I think they overpaid for Jerick McKinnon. He'll probably put up a lot of points in fantasy, but I don't, you know, he's got a 3.3 yards per carry as a career rusher. He's not somebody I would worry about, at least.
Yeah, and the passing game is the biggest thing where he makes an impact, because he was a former quarterback, I believe.
Right.
So the passing game, but overall, it's like, you know, I expected them to trade for Le'Veon Bell this year to, like, mm-hmm. you know, offer at least something, or if, you know, or if the Steelers are going to do anything with him. So it'll be really interesting to see what their team looks like, because you're right, on the offensive side, they have, you know, Garcon's a good receiver. They picked up Dante Pettis, took him ahead of Christian Kirk, actually moved up for him. But, you know, you look at this team as far as for on the defensive side, and they still have not really gotten that much out of their first round defensive linemen. Their secondary is still pretty suspect. And then the games that they won last year, which was, you know, they won a game barely against the Bears, 15-14. They went up against the Texans with, I don't even remember if it even was Tom Savage still starting at quarterback without Deshaun Watson, beating the Titans, who had been very inconsistent. And then the kind of biggest, most impressive game that they had was a victory against the Jacksonville Jaguars, in which their defense looked pretty terrible, giving up, you know, 33 points, and they ended up having a huge game against the Jaguars, scoring 44. That's probably the most impressive one of seeing not just, you know, Garoppolo and Shanahan, very similar to Matt Ryan, a great fit. The thing about the Niners is they'll put up points. The good question is, when they do end up playing a much tougher defense, like not the Rams in week 17 resting their guys and not playing hard for that one, when they start playing some of those real defenses, and when Jimmy Garoppolo starts facing pressure, he stepped up to the challenge, but is that going to be sustainable enough to challenge for the division? I think I agree with you where I don't think that they're going to challenge for the division. They've got five primetime games this year. It's going to be very interesting to see, at least with a tougher schedule, how that's going to end up shaking out for them. Because this was a team, until they at least got their quarterback play figured out, this is a winless team up until that point. So
yeah, they were one of the worst teams in football, if not all of the NFL. They look like, along with Cleveland in like week 11, that they could go winless. I mean, that's how bad they looked. They had a game against Dallas where Dallas went there and Zeke had like almost 200 yards rushing, and it was one of the most lopsided victories I saw last year. I mean, it was reminiscent of when Seattle put up 50 plus points against Arizona with Ken Wisenhunt. That's how bad it looked. They just inserted their will. Now the Niners were starting CJ Beathard and looked completely, you know, limited offensively and defensively.
I got to start Brian Hoyer at one point.
Yeah, it was pretty bad, which led them to trade for Jimmy G. I think they would have gone after Kirk Cousins had he not been available for that second round pick. But you know, Solomon Thomas still has to show you something. He was pretty underwhelming last year. really their best player last year. And I listened to John Middlecoff. He is a reporter, analyst, personality in the Bay Area, follows both the Niners and the Raiders. He said the best player, not best defensive player, the best player on the Niners last year when healthy and playing was Reuben Foster. He said he was leaps and bounds better than anybody they had, including DeForest Buckner, including Jimmy G. And they think that, and I think a lot of us would agree that he has got Hall of Fame potential at linebacker. He just comes with everything else. And we've gone through those roller coasters with
Darryl Washington,
where you just don't know offseason to offseason what's going to happen. He got busted for marijuana. He got busted for having loaded guns in his house. The whole situation with his girlfriend and the assault charges that were dropped that she later redacted, trying to, you know, ruin his career. That's unprecedented. I'm happy that the truth came out and he got off, but man, that looked bad. That looked like one of the worst stories in the NFL for the longest time. I thought he was going to spend some time in jail or in prison following that story. If he's healthy, he's either going to, one of two things is going to happen. He's either going to turn his life around, surround himself with the right people and be a perennial Pro Bowler because he's got that ability, assuming he stays healthy, or he's going to completely flame out. I would lean toward the latter because he's got that personality where it just kind of invites problems, sent home from the combine early. And I know a lot of people will be upset if Hassan Reddick does not turn into a better player, or at least a comparable player to him, based on the fact that Reddick went, you know, probably 17 picks before, 17 or 18 picks before, and a lot of fans like Reuben Foster. But when you've been burned by Darryl Washington, you can't turn around and take that guy 13th overall. So I understand that. But if he's healthy and he's got his head on straight, he is going to be a problem like Patrick Willis used to be a problem for this team. And I think he's got probably the biggest upside of any Niner player, certainly defensively. So if they get, they probably need another offseason, if not two, to revamp that receiving core, to revamp their pass rush, to get a couple more defensive backs of note. But, you know, I think Kyle Shanahan's a good coach. Really, the team that I think is in the biggest trouble is Seattle, because outside of Russell Wilson, that team is in complete flux right now. Their personnel decisions via the draft, via free agency, don't make a lot of sense. I don't understand their new offensive coordinator philosophy, bringing in Schottenheimer, who is underwhelmed, to say the least. He's not his father. And then, you know, the fact that Pete Carroll, in his, I think, mid to late 60s, is got to call it quits at some point. You know, I think they could be a team that you could see go through a couple lull years, Pete transition out, and then somebody else maybe in 2020, 2021 gets a chance to kind of revamp Russell Wilson's career. But he's already over 30. It's fair to wonder, I think, is the Seattle 29 run.
29 right now. I think, yeah, he'll be 30. Is he he'll be 30 by season, yeah.
Okay, right, so he's already 30 years old once the season starts. He's had a lot of wear and tear on his body. He's not somebody I think that it's going to be able to play till he's 37 or so, based on the fact that he's undersized. He gets his, you know, his butt kicked every year because his offensive line is very subpar, to say the least, probably the worst offensive line in the NFL. And, you know, you talk about the fact that they've lost so many key guys defensively. They haven't developed any capable receivers for him. So I think that's a team that, you know, at least is going to challenge for the bottom of the NFC West this year.
Yeah, the biggest thing that was someone pointed out, the Seahawks, that I had to like kind of double check to see, but if you take a look at, since Russell Wilson came in before, they were kind of like a middling 5-11, 7-19. And Russell Wilson came in, they went 11-5, and they kind of reached the pinnacle where they had that Super Bowl they won in 2013 with that 13-3 season. Then you take a look at what happened the year afterwards. They lost, they went down to 12-4, lost the Super Bowl. That was kind of the time where you even heard interviews, I believe, actually, from guys like Cliff Averill and others who have talked about how they kind of lost confidence in things that one. But from 12-4 to 10-6, then to 10-5-1, finished this year at 9-7. I've got the Seahawks I've picked to go 8-8. This year is kind of their team because they've just gotten progressively worse each year. Now, they did at least solidify one spot on the offensive line by trading for Dwayne Brown from the Texans, but they saw Sheldon Richardson, the guy they traded a second-round pick for, just walk away right after the season ended to Minnesota. We've got Kirk Cousins and a loaded defense this year. They'll be ready to kind of roll out this team. But, again, still struggles on the offensive line. The defensive line, you take a look at the side, they're having to kind of try it out. Guys like Barkevious Mingo, former first-round top 10 pick who's busted out of the league. Deion Jordan, who's been, you know, there, and Marcus Smith, the Philadelphia Eagles pick in the first round. So they're basically kind of trotting out, throwing stuff at the wall to see what sticks, because they've not had the cap space. They have not had the ability to be able to, you know, sign a lot of these guys and keep these defensive players. Part of the reason why they're having issues with Earl Thomas now is just because of the decisions that they've made and having poor drafts, trading for players who did not work out, such as the first round pick for Jimmy Graham, trading away Max Unger and part of him for him, who's gone on to be a Pro Bowl center and anchored that line for Drew Brees for years. You're just looking at the Seahawks wondering, where's kind of the biggest positive outside of Russell Wilson throwing to Doug Baldwin? They're Brandon Marshall is having kind of an extra year in their career, but it's just kind of a concern that you would have, is that I would almost take a look at the Cardinals pound for pound, and I don't know if you can, you know, say the Cardinals this year will be able to surpass the Seahawks, but I feel like that they may end up coming close. Like, you may end up seeing 2-8-8 teams or 2-7-9 teams this year, and the Seahawks just seem to be kind of going on the downtrod. The first round pick was mystifying this year, in terms of where they took a running back who most had kind of picked for the third round and took him in the first, versus taking a solid offensive lineman. Will Hernandez has been performing very, very well for the Giants right now. Even Isaiah Wynn was taken by the Patriots. They basically admitted as much as that their entire strategy is built around trying to go with what they think they should be doing, as far as for just saying, all right, we need to boost our run game from last year, so we're adding a running back, versus looking at where the actual problem is. So I just don't see them being able to have a sustainable amount. I don't know if John Schneider is going to be as long for that job unless Russell can kind of keep him around. They just recently apparently added Ryan Grigson, the Colts GM, who notably took his fourth wide receiver on the team, kind of like taking J.J. Nelson, took him in the first round a few years ago because that was their highest ranked player on the board. So I think the Cardinals fans are probably kind of chomping at the bit right now to see an aging Russell Wilson, seeing Jimmy Garoppolo is already, I believe he's 26 years old, at least for right now. He's 26 years old. He's already on his second deal. Jared Goff is probably about, you know, 2 or 3 years away from getting his big deal. Josh Rosen's only 21 years old. If the Cardinals can just go and build around while they have this amount of cap space and looking at the rest of the division, this could be the best way for them to turn around their team without really taking a kind of a plummet to the bottom of the cellar. Let's go ahead and kind of tie up and finish tonight, just taking a look around the NFL at the other quarterbacks who were taken. Obviously, Baker Mayfield, the number one overall pick. Sam Darnold with the Jets. Apparently, Teddy Bridgewater, up until today, has been outplaying the rest of that team. Lamar Jackson is, surprisingly, you know, he's taking quarterback snaps, but he's being kind of used as a gadget player in their offense next to Flacco, versus instead of, or being kind of prepped for that role. And Josh Allen has been up and down, where he occasionally will hit Kelvin Benjamin for a perfect pass, and then the next play, he'll throw into double coverage. It'll get, you know, dropped and picked off by a guy. I think that he's the guy who might end up turning into the Jay Cutler of this draft. And he's a guy that the Cardinals liked a lot. The upside, whenever things go really well for him, they seem to go well. But then the very next play, he'll just make a mind-boggling decision. John, what are you thinking so far as for just seeing the rest of the lay of the rookie quarterback to the NFL versus what the outstanding praise that Josh Rosen has received so far, as we kind of tie it up for tonight on the Bird Game Blitz?
Yeah, I'll just go through them one at a time based on what I'm hearing and reading on Twitter. Sam Darnold, really over the last 10 to 14 days, has looked really good in Jets camp. I thought he was the number one quarterback coming out based on, you know, his size, his attributes, his physicality, his ability to throw the deep ball. I think he's got an opportunity to start week one. They're talking that up right now as a realistic possibility. And Josh McCown is 38 years old. It would be a scenario, if not at the start of the season, when would that happen? It's only a matter of time, in my opinion. And I think he's going to be a really nice player. And, you know, I'm sure you feel the same way, Blake. I'm happy for Todd Bowles that he's got an opportunity to have some longevity, mm-hmm. and they let him continue to coach there in New York, because he is a quality head coach. And then you move on to Baker Mayfield. It looks like, I think, he could sit his entire rookie season based on what I'm reading about Tyrod Taylor, how comfortable he looks in this offense, the fact that they just need to win games this year. They need to see improvement in this roster. He's somebody who plays it very safe, so it's not like he's going to go out and throw a bunch of interceptions or turnovers. I'm in the minority, and I think Baker Mayfield could sit for a lot of this time during the season. He's not somebody I think that's going to blow you away from a physical standpoint. In practice, it's not like, you know, he's 6'4 in shorts making all the throws. I mean, he's very comparable to Tyrod in that regard. Actually, Tyrod, I think, is 1 or 2 inches taller. And so he's got to start to get used to playing under center and that kind of thing. And that's not, that transition is still taking place. So I'm anxious to see, you know, if and when he starts the first quarter of the season. I think it could be a while for Baker, which is probably for the best. Do you really want to insert, you know, the first overall pick, you know, onto a team that didn't win any games last year? So I think it could be potentially until midseason. And then, like you mentioned, Josh Allen's a complete roller coaster, a complete wild card. I think he's going to end up starting kind of by default. I think we both felt that way after the draft based on the fact that they've got AJ McCarron and that's about it in their training camp right now of note. And I think he's going to give you that boom or bust potential where he could have a game where he's 7 of 25 and look terrible. And then the next week go out and complete, you know, 2 or 3 passes of over, you know, 60 yards and have multiple touchdowns. And I think he's kind of in that Jay Cutler, maybe Joe Flacco mold, whereas he's going to be able to run around and do some things. And hopefully they build their offense around hiding his limitations and giving him room to grow. But you think about, they traded away Cordy Glenn. They lost Richie Incognito to semi-retirement, free agency. Their wide receiving core is putrid. They Kelvin Benjamin, I believe, is running around Buffalo now. Zay Jones, who I liked a year ago, is coming off an inconsistent, disappointing rookie season. And then skipping Josh and heading to Lamar Jackson, I think he's got an opportunity to start very quickly. I think they're already incorporating him. I know they're already incorporating him in some first team reps, and they're going to give him opportunities to showcase his abilities. And so we all knew it was only a matter of time for Joe Flacco. He has not performed well since winning that Super Bowl. So I think this team thinks that they could win games with Josh, with Lamar Jackson. You and I, Blake, both thought that the Cardinals could have done the same thing. So, you know, and quickly I'll touch Mason Rudolph, by all accounts, looks pretty good in Steeler camp. He throws a very nice deep ball out route, and I think he's got an opportunity to succeed Big Ben at some point. So all the quarterbacks are about where I thought they would be. The only kind of surprise is I did not think Sam Darnold would have the opportunity to start this soon. I think McCown was going to start week one. He still may. But the fact that they're already talking it up, Todd's already talking it up that he could be the week one starter, I think that all but alludes to the fact that he's going to be the guy for them pretty early.
Yeah, for sure. And with Allen, it's kind of something is, I think it may be a little bit more than the last kind of player who will be the cautionary tale, at least. I don't think he's going to be a total bust, but it might not be as high an end of starter for when you're talking about the cost to get a player like him. Darnold, at least up until today, he actually apparently was at one of his best days of camp. It's going to be interesting to see how that quarterback battle will shake out, whereas I think I totally agree with you on when you're looking at it all said and done, that the Cardinals, at least with guys we look at, like Baker Mayfield, Lamar Jackson, they got a guy who was more pro-ready, a guy we didn't think was going to be there. And it kind of also serves up as a cautionary tale in terms of the fact that Christian Hackenberg was basically traded by the Jets, second round pick, ended up being probably one of the worst, you know, overall busts in terms of NFL history. And the fact that he's never even played in any games. I don't even believe he's done more than starting like 1 or 2 preseason games. And the Raiders just cut him the other day. And it just shows you part of how volatile the National Football League is. It shows just how difficult it is to succeed. And it just kind of shows you, at least for when you do have one of those swings and when you miss on a guy, that it really can mean like the end of a lot of things. It might not mean Todd Bowles' job in this scenario, but it's certainly going to end up meaning a whole lot as far as the you know, wasting that second round pick for the Jets and having to be able to turn it around. So I think that when we all said and done, just kind of summing up what we had from the draft, was Steve Keim needed to make a move, needed to get a quarterback. He went and swung. And so far, everything that we've heard, at least, you know, has been positive. We'll see what happens when the games start going. But when you end up taking a look at taking a risky move like Josh Allen, or even when you talk about Lamar Jackson, it's not as big of a risk perhaps as a guy like Hackenberg in the second was, but all in all, Steve Keim kind of did at least manage to do the move he needed to do to help keep this team where Cardinals fans are excited. Like I training camp is going to be starting this year on July 28th, I believe, is the first open practice. And I would expect it to not be, you know, a sellout crowd, but it's going to be a very, very full stadium. It'll be rocking. People want to get their first look at the new quarterback. And that's kind of a lot of this life and positivity that you get to see from fans where they don't feel like their team is going to be having a, you know, a 2 or a 4 win season. They feel like if they have a competitive team, they'll be able to support as they kind of go through this process. All right, that'll just about wrap it up for us here on the Bird Gang Blitz. John, can you let everyone know where they can find you and talk to you on Twitter while we're in the middle of the Cardinals off season?
Yeah, during this lull time, let's talk some football. I am at Johnny's Football, J-O-H-N-N-Y-S Football on Twitter. Blake, where can they find you?
Yeah, you can find I'm still writing. I've taken a little bit of a break from Revenge of the Birds, but I'm going to be back up there with whenever there's news breaking for the team. I do have my past articles, my quarterback breakdowns that went through. You can see all the things I said about Rosen, Jackson, some of those other quarterbacks there. And find me at Blake Murphy 7. Thank you guys again for listening. We always appreciate it. We'll make sure that we'll be able to keep up and have a couple more shows, at least I know through the off season. As news breaks, we'll be there. Thank you guys again. Make sure you like and subscribe on iTunes, also available on Blog Talk Radio or the Bird Gang Blitz. You guys have a good one. We'll see you next time.